Welcome to the Jazz Notes Podcast. I'm Ben Anderson.
I'm Chandler Holt.
We are recording this on April 30th, the last day of the month. The Jazz season wrapped up a couple of weeks ago. We are knee-deep in the NBA playoffs, wrapping up some of these first-round series. We're not going to spend a lot of time on the playoffs, but going to talk a lot of Utah Jazz. As always, find us on Twitter at KSL Sports. You can find me at Ben's Hoops. You can find Chandler at Chandler Holt KSL. Facebook, TikTok, Instagram, wherever you get your whatever. You can find it at KSL Sports, and of course, read us at kslsports.com. All right, Chandler, we didn't record last week. We kind of did a end of season step away from podcasting for just a moment. And now we're going to get back into it, and we're going to change up the format just a little bit because we're not doing weekly grades. There's not as much weekly news. We are going to do a little bit more of a big picture, like reflection on the season of individual players, but not, you know, one player per episode. We're going to look at three players today.
Yes. Today we got the best vets. We're going to talk about Lauri Markkanen, Colin Sexton, and John Collins' seasons. You can preview upcoming. Maybe we'll have the three rookies up next, and then we'll do sort of groups of three until we get through the entire roster. One piece of weekly news this week, that's it. With the NHL to Utah news breaking the past couple weeks, that's sort of been the sports news here in Salt Lake City. There's some new plans for the Delta Center. Both Ryan Smith and Jazz president Jim Olsen highlighted renovations to make seating optimal for both basketball and hockey. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think they're going to blow out the walls essentially behind the baskets. Ryan Smith kind of talked about it a little bit at the hockey announcement before even the team was officially announced, but kind of when Gary Bettman was here, the NHL commissioner, he talked about how that's where, you know, the change is really going to have to be made. So the sidelines will remain pretty similar. Not sight lines. Sidelines will remain similar. And then the sight lines behind the basket or behind the hockey net are going to be changed. I think you're going to see steeper. And in fact, you might even add seats for the Jazz. What the number I've heard is over 19,000,
okay,
which is more than they have right now. It's going to be about 17 to 17.5 for the hockey stadium. And again, some of this stuff is still fluid. I'm not sure how much of it's fully done, but that was the number I had heard, was 19,000 for the Jazz. So that would add about 800 seats, and maybe it's more or maybe it's less. Again, this stuff stays fluid, but yeah, it's going to be a little bit of a pain, I'm sure, for fans who are dealing with, you know, some construction that they're going to have to work through and figure out, but hopefully in the long run it's worth it. And the advantage is they're not playing in Bluffdale.
Yeah.
The advantage is they're not playing out in Sandy. It remains in Salt Lake City. I know some fans want a new arena because you just want something new, and I don't blame you. That would be cool to have, you know, some of the fancy new arenas we've seen around town. A lot of good bones in the Delta Center that you can build on, and I suspect they'll continue to do that.
If I'm not wrong, I think right now there's about 12,000 unobstructed views. Like, if sitting in a seat, you'll have nothing blocking your view for hockey.
Yeah.
They're trying to get that up to 17,000, which is around the average for NHL stadiums. And then also it'll add some seats for Jazz games as well.
Yeah. So we've got articles about it, a lot of hockey talk at kslsports.com if you're interested in that. But yeah, otherwise, I don't think there's a lot of Jazz weekly news. Mm-hmm. I'm waiting for all rookie teams to be announced. That should happen relatively quickly, I would imagine. We've already had Coach of the Year announced. We've had Six Man of the Year announced. I think we will get all rookie teams. And I do expect to still have Keontae George on that list. I know he didn't close the season extremely strong, but outside of Victor Wembanyama and some of the older rookies like Jaime Jaquez, it actually wasn't like a crazy good rookie year.
Yeah.
And Keontae George was among the better players in that rookie class. So I think he'll make either the first team or the second team. My only question is, does he get first team? Yeah, there's a chance he could still get there. I'm betting second team, but that's the next piece of news I'm watching for. By the way, I didn't say this. We are still going to do the mailbag. Yep. I know we're changing up the format a little bit here. We are still going to do the Utah Jazz mailbag. Got a bunch of questions today, actually, so stick around for that. Should we jump into our reflection on the player seasons?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's get into the player highlights. Who do you want to start with of the three?
You know what? Let's start with John Collins.
Okay.
Because he's maybe, unfortunately, the least exciting. But we're going to talk about kind of their best moments, their worst moments, and then what we kind of see going into the next year, 2 years, whatever.
First up, John Collins this year averaged 15.1 points, 8.5 rebounds, 1.1 assists, 0.9 blocks, 1.4 turnovers. Honestly, going into the year, he was coming off his worst year of his career in Atlanta. He had the finger in, issues. I didn't really know what to expect from him. And just looking at the counting stats, honestly, 15 and 8.5. Maybe better than I even expected.
What's hilarious is it's exactly who he's been his entire career.
Yes.
He's a career average 15.7 points per game. He had 15.1. Okay, half a point off. Career average, 8.1 rebounds per game. He was up to 8.5. Career average, 1.4 assists. He was down to 1.1. Career average field goal percentage, 54. He was at 53. Career average three-point percentage, 35. He was up to 37. So he's like, he's exactly John Collins. Yep. You know what his career average free throw is? 78%. What was he at this year? 79%. Like, his effective field goal percentage, which throws everything together, career average, 59.2%. This year, 59.0%. Like, guys just are exactly who they are. And the good news is John Collins remained who he is. And I actually think John Collins is a usable NBA player. I don't know if anyone's figured out how to use him yet, but there is something there that you can figure out how to use. The Jazz ended up making him their starting center by the end of the season because they could not figure out how to get he and Walker Kessler on the floor together. And that is an issue, and that might be a problem. But you didn't get a guy who was on the downslide of his career where Atlanta offloaded, you know, a terrible salary that's going to be a joke and is going to hamstring you a la Bradley Beal and the Phoenix Suns. That is not at all what you got with John Collins. Still not a perfect fit. You're still trying to figure it out. But there's some promise there.
Yeah, definitely. And like you said, a lot of similar stats comparing to his career averages. But if you look just at last season, I think that the biggest thing for him and honestly the biggest question mark that we had when he came into town was, can he hit the three-pointer? Is he a viable option from long range? And he went from 29.2% last year, like you said, up to 37.1% this year. So that was really big for him. For his best moments, I had the last game he played.
Okay.
The game against Houston on March 29th, he had 30 points, 11 rebounds, 71% from the floor, first 30 bomb as a Jazz man. And honestly, overall impact, I'm gonna sort of sneak into this one as well. I had it as decent because, like I said, like we said, he averaged 8.5 rebounds per game. He was one of the biggest reasons the Jazz were one of the best rebounding teams in the league this year.
It was just a weird situation for John.
Yeah.
And I try and give guys a lot of breathing room when they are moving on from their former team. I mean, it took Mike Conley forever to figure out how to play in Utah after leaving Memphis, where he'd called home for whatever the first 10 years of his career, and then, you know, by his, second season in Utah, he was an all-star. So it takes guys a while. I'm going to break down the John Collins season in before Atlanta and post Atlanta. And I don't mean his career. I mean literally this season. Before visiting Atlanta, and he had his worst moment in Atlanta. That was his worst game of the season. He went back home, super emotional. Get four turnovers in the opening 4 minutes of that game. He was awful in that game. As bad as I've seen like a good NBA player play. He was so shook to be there. In his first 53 games of the season, or I guess it's 55, he started 53 of them. He averaged 14 points. He averaged 8.4 rebounds. He shot 33% from the floor, or from the three-point line. Like, that's bad John Collins, unfortunately. That's lower than who he's been for his career. And again, that was the first 55 games of the season, which is the majority, the overwhelming majority. After that game, something clicked with John. And look, I know Lowry was out a lot. Jordan Clarkson was out a lot. But over his last 13 games of the season, John Collins averages 19 points. So he's 6 points higher. He's still at 8.5 rebounds, but he goes from 33% from three to 52% from three over his last 13 games. Like, it might have just taken him to, like, he had circled this game of going back to Atlanta as, like, this is my moment. I'm thinking about it. It's in my head. I've got to figure out a way to get past it. He was not great until he got past it. And then after that, if John Collins gives you 19 points, 8.5 rebounds, and shoots 52% from three, I think you can figure out how to use him.
Yep.
Even if that number drops to 38% from three and over 50% from the floor, you can still find a way to use that guy in your front court, or at the very least, he has trade value. And that's, again, you got to look at everybody on the Jazz, as unromantic as this is, as trade pieces and as assets, and that's an asset. If John Collins can continue to play that way, he's an asset, and I think he figured it out, and I think there was an emotional breakthrough after Atlanta that was really good for him to get that weight off his shoulder. And I would hope if he comes back next year, if you're a Jazz fan, that he would be able to bring some of that, you know, kind of emotional clarity with him into next season, and just having a second year under Will Hardy, knowing who his teammates are, knowing what's expected of him, to play better.
Yeah, and you talk about like that gelling period. I think another big thing for him is in Atlanta, a lot of times he was just used as like a roll man or a back cutter, right? Mm-hmm. Just getting easy looks at the rim because he had an elite playmaker in Trae Young. Trae Young has been basically around, if not a double-digit assist guy every year of his career. And he goes to a team where now his leading assisting teammate is Jordan Clarkson with about five.
Yeah.
Right? And also an entirely new scheme. So, yeah, in terms of overall impact, I had him as decent. We talked about a few times this year where it felt like he really didn't contribute to any team success.
At all, yeah.
Yeah,
it didn't
whether
it's
defensively or just empty stats. But then, like I said, he was a major contributor for the Jazz rebounding this year. And also, he had the end stretch of the season and also just some games where you could point at him as one of the major reasons the Jazz won.
Kind of the weird thing for John was that his first 55 games, these games that I'm talking about, he was a negative 4.7, and the Jazz were competitive through this stretch. You know, the Jazz were still kind of trying to win games. After that, the Jazz totally start tanking the season. Lowry's not playing. Jordan Clarkson's not playing. And his plus-minus gets better. Like, as the Jazz got significantly worse as a team, John Collins' plus-minus got better. Now, maybe that's a red flag. Maybe he is better on a bad team and he can just kind of put up empty stats. Those are all still question marks, but I think the last 13 games of the year gave me a little bit of optimism about John Collins going into the year. What does the future hold for John Collins? I actually think this is really interesting.
Yeah, I think this is interesting as well because I'm not entirely sure how he fits into a potential Jazz like rebuild as they get towards playoff contention and eventually championship contention. I don't know if John Collins can ever be a starter on a championship team, right? Because it's like he might be a little bit small to guard fours and he might be a little bit slow to guard threes.
Small to guard fives.
Yes, exactly. So I think that he's definitely here next year. I think that the Jazz are going to run it back with him, and I think he's safe through the trade deadline and everything. Past that, I think it depends on what direction the Jazz go. You know, like there's been talk of big game hunting, and then it could go the completely opposite direction, and they trade Lowry and go full tank mode. I think it depends, but I think expecting him here next year at the very least.
Let me give you the sneaky John Collins storyline, which is that he has a player option in 25-26, which is not next season, but the season after that. I bet you he opts out, and I know Jazz fans think that's crazy. Remember, the new TV money hits in 2025-26. Mm-hmm. Now, it is not going to be 2016 when Kevin Durant jumps from the Thunder to the Warriors. They are going to level that money out so it doesn't have this spot where all of a sudden everyone's making $60 extra million. But still, do you remember the crazy spending all those guys got that morning or that night when free agency opened?
Yes.
You are going to see a spike in the salary cap, not like it was in 2016, but it will grow somewhat considerably. And John Collins is going to hit free agency coming off what I expect is another year just like this where he's averaging 15, 16, 17, and 8. And if he shoots the three well, look, John Collins is, let me pull up his age right now, he is 26. So he will be 27 at that point next summer at this time, getting ready for this spike. Like he wants to, he's going into his prime in all honesty. He's going to look for a deal.
Yeah.
And maybe the Jazz want to give it to him. If he plays great next year, awesome. You sign him. That's great. If he is only this, which I don't think he's going to get worse than what he was this year, in all honesty, because he's a good player,
yeah,
he's going to want to cash in, and $25 million is probably not enough, and there's going to be all this cap space. He's going to say, I'm going to sign a four-year deal or a three-year deal somewhere and try and make $140 million because that's not going to be as crazy as it sounds right now. So there's a chance that John Collins is A, on an expiring contract of $25 million. The Jazz don't know if they're going to be able to bring him back or want to bring him back. So he's kind of it's a big trade piece, an expiring deal that you're not totally sure if he's going to pick up his contract or not, but I would lean towards he's not. I would just lean towards the way the NBA works, guys renegotiate deals or guys try and get longer deals to get more money just to guarantee themselves, hey, if I get hurt, at least I've got this locked up. I would kind of get the feeling I'm a little more leaning towards John Collins opting out than I think a lot of people are at this point. So you might want to treat this year like an expiring deal for John Collins, which at $25 million as a 27-year-old is actually a pretty valuable piece, especially if you compare it with some draft picks. So that's what I'm watching for John Collins' future. Otherwise, you know what? Next year he's going to average 15-8. He's going to shoot 35% from three and give you just over 50% from the floor because that's who he is and that's who he's always been, and I don't expect that to change.
Yeah, one more thing for John Collins. Looking at some of like the lower teams in the standings this year, talking about teams that might want to take a bet on a guy like John Collins, like you have, I think, Portland and Charlotte are two teams that would be interested, right? Portland paid Jeremy Grant a while ago, and he's kind of that Jeremy Grant sort of role. Jeremy Grant's definitely a better defender. And then Washington. If Washington moves on from Kuzma, mm-hmm, I could see them being interested in John Collins.
John Collins is really easy to sell yourself on.
Yeah.
In fact, like, the Thunder could sell themselves on John Collins. He's a very nice guy. He's going to be a good locker room addition. He's a little bit clunky, but you know actually who's a perfect fit at center next to John Collins is Chet Holmgren.
Mm-hmm. True.
Or like if the Spurs were like, hey, we just want like a vet that's going to come in and kind of fit really well next to Vic, and he can kind of stretch the floor, or if he wants to sit in the dunker spot and we're going to put Vic out at the perimeter, like, okay, John Collins could probably play there a little bit, and he's going to be a nice guy, and like, I'm not saying those are the moves they're going to be make, but I'm giving you scenarios where every team could justify bringing John Collins in.
Yes.
Every team could find a way to make that work. So that's why I would keep an eye on John Collins as a trade piece this offseason. I would expect he's on the roster opening night, but his expiring deal and his production makes him pretty interesting mixed with his age.
Next up, you want to do Colin Sexton?
Let's do it.
Cool. For Colin Sexton's best moment, or first off, let me give you his stats. In 78 games played, 18.7 points, 2.6 rebounds, 4.9 assists, 2.1 turnovers.
Before we get to specific moments, Colin had an awesome year.
Oh, amazing year.
Colin had a great year. Colin had a much better year than I was anticipating, certainly, and a huge bounce back from last season when he was at, 14 points and 4 assists? Colin Sexton was easily the Jazz's second best player.
Yes.
Easily the Jazz's second best player. And because of the number of games he played, actually knocked on the door of being the Jazz best player this year.
Yeah, no, I almost had him. I think Lauri Markkanen definitely has the best player locked up, but I almost had him as our MVP in the postseason awards just because of that. He was there for 78 games compared to what was it, like 55, 65?
55 for Lauri.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For Colin Sexton's best moment, I had the entire month of April.
Okay.
In 15 games, he scored 20 or more in 13 of them, and that included 11 straight. And in those 15 games, he only had 3 or more turnovers 6 times. So he was also taking care of the ball in the month, averaged 22.5 points, 6 assists on 52.6 from the floor, 39 from 3, and 86 from the free throw line.
And I will go for Collins' best moment. Yeah, great numbers. Crazy. Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, that's a very high-level starting guard. I will go Collins' stretch from December 11th to February 1st, 28 games. He starts 27 of them. Essentially, he takes over that starting role for the Jazz. He averages 21 points, 21.5 points, 5.4 assists, 2.6 rebounds. He shoots 50% from the floor and 41% from three. Like, if he does that for a year, he's an all-star. He's no question all-star. So he had multiple stretches. You and I picked different stretches where he put up all-star numbers that were separated by a month. And the first month of the season, he was just trying to figure out, like, what role am I going to play? And the Jazz were trying to figure out what type of role he was going to play. And the last month of the season, everything had kind of fallen apart, and he was still very good. But Colin was incredible this year. Colin is a guy who went from, like, oh, I don't know what you do with him, to can you afford to give up on this guy? Isn't he exactly what you're looking for to have on your franchise as a 25-year-old who is underpaid, who seems to like Utah and isn't like bursting at the seams to go play in Los Angeles or New York or any of these other places? And it's part of it because he operates on a different rhythm than everyone else, almost like Jordan Clarkson. It's different.
Yes.
Jordan Clarkson's like all vibes guy. Colin Sexton's like, I'm a maniac and I'm going to be in the gym and I'm going to be a psychopath. Danny Ainge talked about it in his end of season press conference. Like, I wish everyone could work out with Colin because he pushes you to such a crazy level. He's got a little bit of that, like, Karl Malone neurosis in the offseason of just like, I got to work so hard until I'm the best player in the world, and not knowing that, like, you can't get there, but man, I'll let you try.
Yeah,
I got
right?
no problem with letting you try. So I love that about Colin Sexton. He was really fun to watch this year. He was maybe the most pleasant surprise on the team.
For his worst moment, I had just early season play. I think it basically leads up right until your stretch for his best moment started. Just all the games in October and November. He only had one 20-point game in 19 games played. He had 5 games under 10 points. And early in the season, we were like, okay, is he going to have a step back even
in
his first year?
Yeah, what a disappointment.
Yeah, because he was averaging 11.9 points and 3.1 assists on 43, 35, 86.
Yeah, his low point was the game at Portland where Will Hardy has the, if you're not going to play defense and you're not going to pass, you are not going to play for this team.
Yep.
And I don't think he was talking about Colin Sexton, but Colin had 1 point on 0-of-5 shooting in that game. Like, it was the low, low point of this Jazz season when we all, I think, realized, like, oh, this is not a playoff team.
Yeah.
This is not a step forward. This is bad. I'm going to circle that game specifically as the low point for Colin, because I remember thinking, like, man, this dude can't play at all. Like, this dude is checked out or whatever, just does not fit the vibe with Will Hardy. And then maybe, you know, we talked about our high stretches for him. The high moment, honestly, for Colin might have been when Will Hardy had that press conference where he said, you know, Colin and I had a moment where we had to come together and I had to realize I had to forget all my preconceived notions about who Colin Sexton was in Cleveland, which is a high scorer on a bad team. And I had to stop using that prejudice against Colin, that that was his label, and that was something I had put on him and not who he actually was. And I had to take Colin at face value, which is he doesn't come into the office asking for more minutes. He only works hard. He does everything you ask of him. He'll come off the bench. He will start. And he gives you his best.
Yep.
Take that. Just take that. Don't think of all this other stuff with Colin. Just take that. And that just kind of unlocked what Colin Sexton did. So the low point Portland, maybe the high point, just kind of the pure vote of confidence from the Jazz front office. But man, the way Danny Ainge talked about him this offseason, the way Will Hardy talked about him, and then his performance, like, again, Colin ruled. Colin was great this year. I give Colin maybe the only A-plus of anybody on the Jazz roster this season. I think he deserved it. So he and Kenneth Lofton Jr. So I'll give Colin an A-plus. Super high highs, way more highs than lows, and maybe the best story going into the offseason as far as, like, you may have found a second guy, and yep, it continues to make the Donovan Mitchell trade look better.
Yeah, so yeah, I'm with you. For overall impact, I had very high A+, however you want to put it. Before the trade deadline, this goes into your best moment stretch. The Jazz were 19-9 when Sexton dropped 20, so that's impact on winning right there.
Well, let's look at his contract situation again really quickly. This is something we had talked about. He is underpaid. He's under contract next year for $18.1 million. He's under contract the year after that, $18.9 million. The same way the Jazz are going into this offseason, figuring out if they can extend Lauri Markkanen, I bet they will do with Colin Sexton next summer.
Yes, definitely.
If he's still on the roster. Now, here's the thing. Like, if, let's say the Orlando Magic are like, ugh, we're good, but like we got to get a better guard on the team. Like, I'm not sure there's a better option out there than Colin Sexton. I know there's talk about like Trae Young, but it's like, Trae Young doesn't play defense. He doesn't want any interest on that side of the floor. Like, I might think, like, can I get a deal on Colin Sexton? Now, if I'm the Jazz, unless I'm tanking and blowing it up and going capture the flag, Cooper flag, like that's what you're going after, unless you're doing that, like I would be like, okay, can you get Franz Wagner?
Yeah.
And like, would you trade Colin Sexton and 3 first round picks for Franz Wagner? And thinking like, we just got to run out 2 6-foot-10 wings and Lauri Markkanen and Franz Wagner, and that's going to be what our identity is going forward. And we think that's really good, and Colin Sexton's worth giving up because you have Keontae George.
Yep.
I could see that type of a trade if Orlando was interested. I don't think Orlando's going to be interested because they think Franz Wagner's going to be an all-star and they think he's going to be really good. But if something like that presents itself, I could see Colin Sexton being moved. But man, at $18 million, with the ability to extend him in next summer, I would think, I'm not pretending to be the CBA master, but there's no reason why you shouldn't be able to extend him. Like, I would absolutely keep him around at 25 years old with a great attitude and seems to like Utah.
Yeah, definitely. Would you ever consider maybe like Anthony Black, another young player, and some picks for Colin Sexton?
So that's if you're going to do Ace Bailey, Cooper Flag, and you're trying to absolutely bottom out. Be like, yeah, give the Jazz Gary Harris or whatever. What's your deal? Like, what's your big contract that you don't want anymore? Markelle Fultz, even though I think Markelle's an unrestricted free agent. Like, yeah, what's your bad contract? Jazz will take that, throw in Anthony Black, throw in a couple of future draft picks, and here's Colin Sexton, and that's going to be a great fit for you.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I would consider that if the goal is to bottom out, because the truth is you're too good with Colin Sexton and Lauri Markkanen to bottom out.
I do have a question for you. There's been a lot of talk about the backcourt, right? We went into this year talking about what is the backcourt going to be like. It looks like we don't know what it's going to look like for the Jazz. We didn't know who was going to start throughout the entire season. And then after the season, there's talks of maybe Keontae isn't the point guard of the future. Maybe he's going to be a 2-guard, right? And the Jazz's biggest problem this year was defense. Is the backcourt of the future Colin and Keontae? Or are you looking to move one of those guys to the bench and bring in a more defensive-minded player in the backcourt? What do you think Colin Sexton's role will be if he does stay in Utah?
That's what gets tricky, is that he is not very big, and Keontae's not very big. So I think, and we'll talk about this a little bit in the mailbag, maybe the ideal spot is you go and draft a really big guard in the backcourt, which is Nikola Topic. He's like kind of the guy that I would say is the big guard in the backcourt right now that can run the show. You don't need Colin or Keontae to be your primary playmaker. That's what Topic does so well. And then those guys can kind of actually do their jobs, which is be a little bit undersized, but be complementary playmakers, which actually is what Jamal Murray is. Nikola Jokic is their point guard.
Yep.
When you need to really get into your stuff, you let him run the show. And then Jamal is complementary in that sense. Or Aaron Gordon can pick up some of it. Could you do something like that with a Topic, a different Nikola, and then just have Keontae or Colin be complimentary players because they're undersized, but Topic is like 6'6", 6'7", and can run the show. Those are kind of your tricky options, and it might depend on what they do this offseason.
Okay, Lauri Markkanen.
Let's get into Lauri, then we'll take a quick break.
So, Lauri this year, like we said, played just 55 games. 23.2 points, 8.2 rebounds, 2 assists, half a block, 1.4 turnovers.
Took a step back from last year.
Yes, definitely.
Lauri was an all-star, a no-question all-star last year. Borderline all-NBA. Didn't deserve any of those this year. I mean, he was not a serious threat to make an all-star game. He won most improved player. He dropped 2 points per game. He dropped in rebounds. His defense was significantly worse this year. His three-point shooting actually got better. He took more threes. He made more threes. But his field goal percentage got a little bit worse. His effective field goal percentage dropped again a little bit as well. So I don't think Lauri was as good this season as he was last year.
Yeah, I would agree. For his overall impact, we can hit that before the moments. I said very high still. There's a pretty direct correlation between him being on the court and winning games, especially earlier in the season. And then I have the note here, step down from last year, but still clearly the best player.
He's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the drop-off wasn't significant. He just wasn't as stellar as he was last season, and he's still an extremely, extremely high-level player.
Yes.
And you're thrilled to have him on the roster as long as he will stay. So, best moments? Unfortunately, I mean, you mentioned John Collins' last game of the season. Like, that was kind of the problem for Lauri, is he had the game against Phoenix that went to double overtime. I thought he was awesome in that game. He had 38 points. That was his high mark of the season. He played 49 minutes. He was going toe-to-toe with Kevin Durant. You're like, okay, this dude's the real deal.
Yep.
Absolutely. He only had, let's see, 10 games of 30 points or more this year. I kind of thought that might be a little bit more consistent. He had a really good game in Dallas on March 25th where the Jazz lost, but it was kind of close. He was 6 of 9 from 3. He was hitting big shots in the fourth quarter. He scored 34 points, and you're like, oh yeah, that's the all-star Lauri Markkanen. That honestly might have been my spot where he'd kind of been battling injuries, and he came back, and I thought, oh yeah, this dude's absolutely still for real, and that's why you want to have him. That would probably be my high point on the season.
My high point is when he returned from his midseason injury, and right when he got back, the Jazz went on that big win streak. That was in December, and when he returned, the Jazz went 13-4 over the next 17.
Yeah, and it was directly correlated to his return to the lineup.
He averaged 24.2 points and 8.9 rebounds on 51-41 and 90.1, 50-40-90 club in that stretch. That's more of a lot of our moments have been stretches. For an individual moment, the one that comes back to me is when he hit two clutch threes against Orlando to take the lead in the final minute. Bancaro went on to hit the game-winning layup in Delta Center in that game, but Markkanen put them up in the final minute, and that was sort of just an individual moment that stuck out to me.
Really early in the season, I think it was the second game against the Clippers,
he
also had a crazy game because he went toe-to-toe with Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. Lauri had his second highest scoring game of the season on the road against a healthy Clippers team. He had 35 points and 12 rebounds. Paul George had 36 and 4. Kawhi had 25 and 9. And Lauri was the best player on the floor.
Yeah.
In LA against the Clippers. That was also a very high moment for him. It was just so long ago. And you know what? I actually think the high moment for Lauri might come this summer if he signs an extension. And the fact that in his end of season conversation, I asked him, I said, Lauri, do you want to sign a contract here? And he kind of said, oh, I've seen guys make mistakes signing him too early or signing him too late. He tried to be good at like not answering the questions. And the only thing was, my takeaway was, oh, this dude's absolutely signed in the contract.
Yeah.
Like, this dude can't wait to get his name on the name for that, or his name on the paper for that $180 million extension or whatever it is. Like, I could be wrong, but using kind of my critical thought and how I've read players in the past, I think he can't wait to sign that deal. And that would, of course, be the highlight for him, is that he gets to stay in Salt Lake City. That would be huge for Jazz fans, and he's the right player to have here.
For worst moment, I have an individual game again against the Pelicans on January 23rd in a almost 30-point loss, 153-124. He put up 11 points and 4 rebounds on 4 for 15. Only Dunn scored less of the 5 starters, and he had one less point at 10. And I just felt like it was one of a few low-impact games for Markkanen. He scored under 15 in 5 games this year, and I just feel like there weren't as many of those last year in his first season in Utah. I mean, of course, I'm sure I could go look at the stats and be like, okay, he had 12 points here, 10 points here, whatever. But I just feel like there were more games where he had low impact than a super high impact, like the 35-point games we're talking about.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think we could even just look kind of post-trade deadline.
Yep.
He was a little bit down because they traded his friend, which was Simone Fontecchio. My understanding is they were together when Simone found out he got traded, and that was, you know, Lauri doesn't have a lot of friends in the locker room. That doesn't mean he's not friendly. He's just so introverted. He is not like The guy, Donovan, was so loud.
Yeah.
Like, Keontae is so much louder. Chris Dunn is so much louder than Lauri Markkanen in the locker room. They're buddies. They talk. He has friends. But I think, like, Simone was one of his guys. And when that happened, I think that was probably hard on him. After the trade deadline, 12 games, he shot 40% from the floor and 37% from three, both significant drops from where he was on the season. 21.5 points, 7 rebounds. He just kind of wasn't great after the trade deadline. And, you know, the Jazz need to keep spacing around him. As much as we can say, like, oh, he was sad because Simone was gone, it was like, no, he was sad because the Jazz lost 2 40% three-point shooters, and it made his life a lot harder.
Yep.
But, you know, he kept a positive outlook. I thought he was enjoyable all season. The low points are like, yeah, it's pretty minor. It's nothing to be super concerned about. You know what maybe the big picture low point is for Lowry is that, like, the things you were hoping, like, oh, is he going to learn to score with the ball in his hands? Oh, is he going to become a better passer? Those things didn't happen.
True.
So we may have just gotten a little bit closer to recognizing, like, he's way better than he was in Cleveland and Chicago, but maybe he's not closing in on being the next Dirk Nowitzki like a lot of Jazz fans had hoped. That might be the low point, is just that, like, big picture, his ceiling might not be unreachable.
True. It's
unreachable high. He will get there, but if his ceiling is even close to where it is now, fine. He's a great player, and he's a borderline all-star, and you can use him every year.
Yeah, definitely. And honestly, I just feel like there was a lot of new faces in the locker room, and also I feel like the Jazz were sort of waiting to pick what direction they wanted to go, and I feel like that could have affected his step back, like we call it. So even if he's just giving you what he gave you last year every year, that's a second or third best player on a championship contender. You just have to get there.
His future, he is under contract next season, but he'd be an unrestricted free agent after that. The Jazz want to give him as much money as they can. They've got a lot of different ways they can structure the deal, which would allow them to sign players this offseason and still sign him to an extension, or they don't, and they just say, hey, we're going to give you a $45 million deal, and then it will decrease. And I'm not using exact numbers. I'm just saying they could front load the deal and then have it decrease every year, which gives you more flexibility down the road. They can't sign him until August 8th, so they will know what their free agency options look like well before then, before they are able to get him to this contract extension. And I also wouldn't, like, panic if he doesn't sign the deal.
Yeah.
If the Jazz have to go into next season. Here's what Lowry said. We love to be here. I've said it multiple times. My family likes to be here. And then he joked, especially if we get a hockey team now, which they have. But I've been emphasizing the winning part too. I will say, I would not overlook that hockey team aspect of it. Not just because he's a hockey fan. It's that you're bringing two other Finnish players in with him, including a young guy, Matias Michelli, who's 24 years old from Finland, who's a huge Lowry fan apparently, like, was stoked to get a photo in his locker room because, like, Lowry's the guy.
Yeah.
Okay, you brought other professional athletes from Finland to Lowry's hometown, and they're not going to see each other a lot during the season because they're going to have opposite schedules, but, like, there's support here. There's a culture here. There's guys he knows here. I actually think that might be a huge positive for him. So that's a good thing. I expect Lowry to be a long-term part of the Jazz future.
Yes, definitely.
So that good season. Not an A-plus season, but like a B-plus.
Yep.
And he was an A-plus last year, so still very good. All right, that was long. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll get to your mailbag questions. Welcome back to the Jazz Notes podcast. Ben Anderson, Chandler Holt. Fun recapping the players' seasons. I'm excited to do that with the rookies.
Yes.
Coming up next week. And then, of course, we'll just kind of break down through, you know, the role players, et cetera, and we will do some of that. In fact, we should probably do it with the coaches in the front office as well. We should include them into these recaps. But let's do what my favorite part of the podcast every week, the mailbag. You can find us on Twitter, as I've mentioned, at KSL Sports, at Ben's Hoops, at Chandler Holt KSL. We always send out this prompt every Tuesday around 11 o'clock. You just respond to the tweet, and we'll answer your mailbag questions. What do we have?
First up, two similar questions from Jeremy Fairbanks and Caden G, just sort of asking about the rebrand and when they can expect sort of some news to come out on that. Caden mentioned the last one was released on June 16th, so will it be around the same time?
I think they're going to want it done before the draft.
Yep.
So the draft is, the 26th and 27th, so I would expect it before then. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if it's next month.
Okay.
By the way, today's April, so next month is, I'm not saying it's going to drop tomorrow, I'm just saying I wouldn't be surprised if we see it then. Jazz could use some positive momentum, and maybe they want to do it. And, you know, I don't think they would do it before the draft lottery. That's really quick. But I wouldn't be surprised if it's something like that before then. I could be wrong. Maybe it is mid-June. Yes, the rebrand is happening. I will tell you the other rumor I've heard. This is going to be what everyone's so excited about. I heard it's a step towards what sports fans like and a step away from what, like, designers like.
Okay, good.
So that's what I've heard. Because I think actually a lot of people liked the idea that they were trying something so different.
Yep.
And like designer people liked that they were trying something so different. And I liked the change. I know a lot of jazz fans hated it. I think it's going to look more like what sports fans want. So
that's big.
I don't know what that means. I've told you. I've heard the Jazz Note logo is going to be around. I've heard mountains. I've heard the yellow's gone. Those are the things I've heard. That's not news. That's what I told you about a month ago now at this point. I've heard it's a step towards what sports fans like. So we'll see. I don't know. I haven't seen them. I promise you I haven't seen them. If I did, I would tell you more about what I'd seen. I haven't.
Another one from Caden G. If you were running the team, what would your off-season game plan look like?
It's really hard.
Yeah.
I understand big game hunting and what Danny Ainge is talking about there. I again would just say I just want to continue to improve my asset cash. I want to continue to have flexibility, because if I'm a Jazz fan, I'm sure it's really easy to look at Minnesota and be super jealous of what they have, and look at, you know, Denver or OKC. OKC and Minnesota are probably the two great examples. This is Rome. It was not built overnight. I mean, Minnesota hasn't won a playoff series in 20 years until yesterday or 2 days ago. Like, yep. It took so long to get back to relevancy for them. And they made a lot of mistakes along the way. They also had to bottom out. They had to get a bunch of number one picks. They had bad number one picks. Cat by himself was a really bad number one pick. It took until they got a superstar in Anthony Edwards to be the guy. OKC kind of hung around. They went to the playoffs or almost with Chris Paul and had to cash in other chips and trade everyone away and have a couple of really down seasons. And they traded Paul George to get Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and still nobody expected him to be an MVP. Yeah. And he's in that conversation now. So just continue to maintain flexibility. I would not go all in on anything. I'm very curious what the outlook is, and we'll talk about this a little bit more. But yeah, who panics? Which team around the NBA panics? Is it Phoenix? Is it Milwaukee? If Dallas ends up losing to the Clippers, do they panic? Like, there's still a lot of those out there. And here's the thing, they may panic and still just decide to run it back next year.
Yep.
So I go into the offseason with the idea that I want to maintain flexibility, and I'm open to getting better and I'm open to getting worse. Honestly, with both of them, the one thing I would say I want to do is I want to re-sign Lowry.
Yes. That's like
that would be my top priority. That's kind of an unquestionable. I want to win the lottery. I want to win the draft lottery. That's probably best case scenario as far as what's going to happen in the next 2 weeks. And if not, I actually feel pretty okay about being at 8. I just hope I don't drop to 10.
Yes.
You know, but otherwise, I think you're okay at 8 or 9. I think there's going to be good players on the board. And I just go in with the idea of maintaining flexibility and not painting myself into a corner, which is what Phoenix did, which is probably what Milwaukee has done. And it's really hard to get out of those situations.
Speaking of teams panicking, from Utah Jazz News, what's the likelihood of Devin Booker to Utah?
Not zero. I don't think they're going to trade him this summer.
Yeah.
But if I was Phoenix, I would blow it up. Because it's easy to look back and say, like, Danny Ainge played Grim Reaper and traded Donovan and traded Rudy Gobert. It's like, the Jazz weren't particularly close to winning a title. They couldn't get out of the first round of the playoffs. And they said, instead of Rudy losing value and getting older and more expensive, and Donovan Mitchell getting disgruntled, actually getting disgruntled, and not just rumors that he's disgruntled, actually asking out and getting to a spot where you're going to lose trade value for him, move now and start this process early so you're not just starting. You could have waited and held on to Donovan until today.
Yeah.
And traded Rudy and Donovan today, and imagine two more playoff exits with a new coach and just being like, now you're starting the process over. You should have done this when you had a chance at Victor Wembanyama, or you should have been 2 years into this rebuild already and you waited too long. There's going to be a team that does that, and 2 years from now is going to be regretting doing that. And so if I were Phoenix, like, here's the problem. Kevin Durant's 36.
Yeah.
Like, he's only going to lose value and his injury risk goes through the roof. I would trade Kevin Durant tomorrow if I could. And guess what? Once you trade Kevin Durant, Devin Booker wants out. So then I'm just trading Devin Booker, and what I'm trying to do is get 10 draft picks in those two trades and good young players and being exactly where the Utah Jazz are right now.
Yes.
That's exactly what I'm trying to do if I'm Phoenix. So maybe they'll explore that. Maybe Matt Ishbia says, oh man, I'm the laughingstock of the NBA. I've painted my team into a corner. It's the sunk cost fallacy. I'm not going to double down on it and just try and improve on the margins. I'm going to trade everybody. I'm going to start fresh. I'm going to give James Jones his team back. We're not listening to Isaiah Thomas anymore. And that's how we're going to run the program. So, not zero. I mean, there's a real chance that Devin Booker is the next star that fits the Jazz's timeline that comes available. I wouldn't bet on it.
No.
But not zero. And yeah. I would have said 2 years ago it was zero. And that's how progress has to move.
But yeah, like you said, Kevin Durant is 35. Bradley Beal is 30. Both of those guys are making 50-plus mil a year. Yeah. If I'm the Suns, you're either trading everybody or maybe running it back. I feel like that's a terrible decision. But I feel like Booker is the most likely one to stay if they're not trading all three.
And you can't trade Bradley Beal. Yeah, you just literally, I mean, yeah. A, he has a no trade clause,
and
B, nobody wants him.
Contract. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Next up, though, from Shoulders, he has a few scenarios, and he wants to know which one is the most likely. A, the Jazz fully tank and sell vets, including Lauri. The Jazz acquire some big game and make the playoffs, or they keep their options open like they have the past two seasons.
C. Yeah, I mean, easily. It is C. Now, look, you can keep Lauri and still tank. Like, here's the hard part. The Jazz would love if Lowry's extension date was May 8th and not August 8th. I don't think Lowry's a major risk to leave, but I guess there's a chance if the Jazz have a terrible July and make mistakes and make a dumb trade with Colin or something and Lowry doesn't like the direction, maybe he wouldn't sign it. But man, if you could sign Lowry to a 4-year extension and then say, oh yeah, by the way, we're just going all out for Cooper Flagg next year. There's a hockey team that's going to mask whatever bad play we do because the fans are going to be in the Delta Center anyways, and there's going to be all this goodwill about sports in Utah, and people are going to like Ryan Smith because he brought the hockey team. We've got all this equity built up. Let's just lose 60 games next season and try and get Cooper Flagg. You could absolutely do it. And signing Lowry first would be the best way to do it. The hard part is you don't have that ability because you can't sign him until August 8th.
Yeah.
So I would say most likely is actually probably a little bit of C and a little bit of A, is the Jazz keep their options open and get worse than it is they acquire big names. Because, and not that they don't want to, it's just you need another team to cooperate with you. You control being bad. You can lose games. It's easy to sell your players. It's hard to say, hey, Dallas, give us Luka. Hey, Milwaukee, give us Giannis. Hey, Phoenix, give us Devin. Hey, you know, whoever. That's really difficult. So big game hunting is nice to say, and I believe that the Jazz want that. I just don't. It's not that easy to accomplish.
Exactly.
And what you don't want to do is be like, well, we're desperate, so let's trade 4 first round picks for Brandon Ingram, who might not be a difference maker, or for 4 first round picks for Trae Young, who might not get you to the promised land like you're hoping. So a little bit of C, a little bit of A, more C, that they keep their options open like they have the past two seasons and continue to be patient and continue to wait, because Danny Ainge's patient meter is broken.
Yep.
Yours starts to run out and you start to feel pressure, and Danny Ainge does not feel that pressure. He hasn't felt it. It's not changing the way he's viewed this team. He even said in his end of season press conference, yeah, we're going to try and go big game hunting. And then he immediately followed it up with, and if that doesn't happen by July, I mean, he said by July, which was interesting. Like, the Jazz want to get some of this stuff done before free agency opens, meaning leading up to the draft. And if it doesn't happen, then they will make 3 draft picks and they will be fine.
Yep.
And they're going to just continue to do what they did this year and wait again. And you know what? That might be the right decision. It might be the right decision to do exactly what you did last year and hope that of your 3 picks, you randomly get somebody who hits, and that's how you get your star. And you're better to just continue to take swings than trade those 3 picks for somebody who's good but not great.
Next up from Glenn Anderson, this is going into the bringing a big game hunting storyline. Create some unlikely scenarios that bring 2 superstars to Utah. All start. Embiid wants out. Jazz give up the fart and trade for him, and then sign PG-13. And then he mentions some names of some guys: Luka, Giannis, Brandon Ingram, Lillard, Trae Young, Kat, and Booker. I think that there's some of these guys that are tricky. I think that Kat, now that the Timberwolves have made it out of the first round, right? I feel like if they lost in the first round, they'd be like, okay, maybe something isn't working here. And honestly, I could see them looking at the Kat-Gobert sort of mixing and pointing a finger at that being the issue. But I think that the Timberwolves are going to, regardless of how the second, third, and the finals go, they're going to be trying to run it back more or less next year. And then for Luka, I think it would take an early playoff loss. And then honestly, Kyrie leaving. What do you think for 2 superstars?
I would suspect Luka's got at least another year or two in Dallas. I think the trades they made, getting Daniel Gafford and PJ Washington, like their GM even said, we're built for 3 years. Like, he kind of laid out the window of how long they expect Luka to be, how long they're going to be unwilling to trade Luka. Even if he were to say, like, hey, I'm interested in leaving, they're going to keep trying to retool around him and fix whatever they have. I think that's where they are. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not expecting Luka. What you want is a player who's going to bring the second player. So you want the scenario of how do you bring that second guy? Yeah, you want to have a guy in Utah next to Lowry that someone says, oh man, I like what they're building. I want to go play there. Because like all of a sudden we look at OKC and if we're trying to figure out like what is the next move for Kevin Durant, where does Kevin Durant get traded? Like it actually makes a lot of sense to trade him back to the Thunder, right? Like you, they've got a bunch of draft picks. They could package Josh Giddey and Lu Dort and get some money and take his salary back. And Phoenix would say, well, we're getting some young players, some draft picks back. That's valuable. And Kevin Durant actually has interest in going back to OKC to remedy his legacy and still have a chance to win a title.
Yes.
Well, people want to play with Shea. People want to play with Chet. People want to play with J-Dub. You got to be somewhere people want to play.
Yes.
And so you got to get the first guy that people want to play with. And that's where you got to be careful. It's like, who do stars want to play with? And in all honesty, sometimes I think I misread that, so I'm not going to throw out names who I think guys want to play with. Because do you remember last summer, 2 years ago, the name that everybody wanted to play with was Devin Booker?
Yeah.
Oh, he's awesome. Oh, everyone wants to go live in Phoenix and play with Devin. I saw Jaden McDaniels in video clowning that dude after the series ended. Swearing at him to his face, telling him to enjoy Cancun,
yep,
making fun of him, and everyone was laughing in Devin Booker's face. And Luka has been laughing in Devin Booker's face. Like, I don't know, maybe he's a crybaby that nobody wants to play with. I honestly don't know. Maybe he is awesome and everyone wants to play with him. But 2 years ago, the idea was everybody wants to play with Devin Booker, and now Jaden McDaniels, who's a very good role player, but as a role player, is making fun of him to his face in a playoff sweep. So maybe no one wants to play with him. Those are the kind of tricky parts of, like, if you traded everything for Zion this offseason, does anyone want to play with Zion? I don't know. Maybe he doesn't work hard enough and other guys see that and say, yeah, he's only going to take us so far. Do people want to play with Trae Young? He averages 11 assists a game. You think I'm going to get the ball? Or maybe you say, well, I'm going to watch that dude dribble for 20 seconds and then I'm going to get a grenade at the end. If I hit a three, he gets an assist and he looks good off of it. Like, that's what gets really difficult.
Yeah. And also, I would ask Jazz fans to be careful what you wish for, because I'm looking at some of the names here and I just don't have a lot of faith in it working out. Biggest one being Joel Embiid, right? I think Joel Embiid, don't get me wrong,
if he comes available, you trade for him.
Yes, definitely.
You do.
Yes, definitely. He's one of the most dominant players of this century so far. But I think that the injury stuff is very scary still for Embiid.
And it's only going to get worse.
And it's only going to get worse. Yeah. Exactly. He's a big guy. He's getting older. And like if he takes off some weight, sure, he'll be a little bit quicker and maybe have less injury risk, but part of why he's so good is the fact that he's as dominant as he is.
At 270 pounds.
Yes, exactly. And then Trae Young and Karl Anthony Towns, I think that, but again, don't get me wrong, all these players are very talented and they will help the Jazz win games, but how much are they really going to help? Does it make you go from the 11 seed to the 7 to 10
seed? Does it get you 32 to 52, or does it only get you 32 to 42?
Yes, exactly.
Because that's a huge difference.
Yes.
Because you know what? Kelly Olynyk and Simone Fontecchio took you from 32 to 42.
Yep.
That's what we learned. As soon as they were gone, the Jazz were bad. So are you just giving up a bunch of assets for what's the equivalent in one player of Kelly Olynyk and Simone Fontecchio, but it's got a cooler name in Trae Young?
Yes,
That's the hard part of that job. It's the really hard part about that job, and it's where other people have gone wrong making mistakes.
Next up from Cam Young, are the Jazz going to keep their draft workout secret again this year? And should we expect that every year moving forward?
Yes.
Yes.
I wish I had more to tell you. I like draft workouts more than anybody. I liked going to them. I liked figuring out who these players are. I like talking to them. One of the hard things now that's really difficult to do is saying, like, man, I watched that guy's film. Why'd you draft him? The best player I did this with ever was, oh man, like, Julius Randle's pretty fun at Kentucky. Whatever, like, there were some errors. And then I saw him in person. I'm like, oh my, dude is 6'9". His shoulders don't fit through a doorway. Like, you know what? Julius Randle can be all the problems you want. He's going to be an NBA player for 15 years.
Yeah.
Because he's so huge and is so skilled. He's going to make it work. And he did, and he has. Seeing these guys in person really matters. I remember seeing DeJounte Murray and being like, oh yeah, that dude, his shoulders are so big. He looks like Rajon Rondo. He's going to be fine. Seeing their bodies in person really is a huge deal.
Yeah.
Not seeing their... And again, it's not just me. That's what scouts look at. They go and they look at how big... What are your measurements? Are you big in your legs? Are you big in your torso? Like, the things that are really going to matter. Do you have long arms? How is that going to translate? And you can tell guys who are going to make it or not make it a lot based on the eye test really early on.
Yeah. I have a question. Do you think that this started in the Donovan Mitchell draft? I don't know the whole story, but I know that apparently Donovan Mitchell had a fantastic workout and the Jazz were like, dude, this does not get out of the building.
His private... So he had the workout and you don't get to watch the workouts, but you got to do interviews after. And he still did the interview process and said, I thought it was good.
Okay.
But Dennis Lindsay, yeah, said you will get fired if you talk about how good this was because he's the number one target we have and we think he might be the best player in this draft and we're going to do everything we can to move up and get him. And they did.
Yeah.
So I think it just has everything to do with Danny Ainge saying, like, okay, what upside do I get out of you knowing what I think?
Yeah, true.
Which I can't blame them.
Makes sense.
But, yeah, I think it's a bummer. More media access is good for me, and I like the draft specifically. So I wish that was the case. Now, look, if the Jazz end up getting the number one overall pick, they're only going to work out. I mean, they'll work out all top 10 guys still. And, look, they're still going to have a chance to work out seven of the top 10 guys because this draft is not a crapshoot. But if you aren't guaranteed to go number one or two, you could slip to the Jazz at 8 or wherever they end up picking. So Jazz are going to get most of these names in. And I think that is the other aspect of it. Like, who are the Jazz going to work out? Every single one of them.
Yeah.
That's who. Especially because they have the 29th pick and the 32nd pick also. They're going to work out every single person, and that's what you can assume.
Next up from Alex. Out of the Lakers, Clippers, Suns, 76ers, Heat, and Bucks, who is the most likely to blow it up this offseason?
Actually, as far as superstars go, I wouldn't be surprised if Jimmy Butler randomly got moved.
Yeah.
Pat Riley's a little cold-blooded. He's got a little Danny Ainge in him. Jimmy is hurt often. Miami is not close.
Mm-mm.
They are not re-signing Jimmy Butler and retooling around him away from getting better. I don't think they're going to trade Bam. Now, Bam is kind of this quiet name out there that if the Jazz were like, hey, we'll give up a bunch to get a different player, like Bam might be the best defensive player in the NBA. He's not going to win DPOY this year, but he is one of those guys. He is an absolute difference maker defensively. He's a really good offensive player. Seems like a good guy. People seem to really like him. That's like kind of an interesting name I would put as like a dream scenario for the Jazz. I don't think he's going to become available. I think they're going to retool around Bam going forward, and maybe you trade Jimmy to a team like the Lakers, mm-hmm. who are going to say like, hey, they're going to call up and be like, man, we want Trae Young. We've got 3 draft picks, and here's Austin Reeves. And what if Pat Riley is like, hey, I've heard you're offering all these picks. What if you actually want to throw in like one or two other players and Austin Reeves and those 3 picks, and then Jimmy Butler will go back your direction? Because Pat Riley's seeing that like this guy's a year away from needing an extension. They're not going to pay him a bunch of money because he's not worth a max deal anymore, and you cash in one last year.
Yeah,
I could kind of see that happening, even though Miami is pretty fiercely loyal. So I think they're most likely to do it. I think that getting 2 wins over Luka has done this weird thing for the Clippers where they're going to believe, like, oh, if Kawhi was just healthy, regardless of what happens, like, if they win, it's certainly happening. If they don't win, they've already had enough success of being like, I think this James Harden thing's going to work.
Yeah, yeah.
They're going to convince Lakers aren't blowing it up.
No, Lakers are biased this offseason.
Phoenix, I think, is just too far down the rabbit hole to fix it. I think they're going to continue to just spiral out of control, even though we've talked about, like, what they should do versus what they actually will do, and I think they're too afraid to trade their stars. Was there any other teams that I missed in there?
The Bucks.
One of the sneaky questions I've had about Milwaukee is like the Jazz reportedly pursued Dame last year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how far down they went, but apparently they pursued him and then just didn't have the same offer for Dame that the Bucks offered, which was Jrue Holiday and some draft picks. What if the Jazz could be like, well, I mean, that was only a year. It was a terrible fit. Dame got divorced. Like, he had all these personal issues. Says he didn't say he doesn't like Milwaukee. He says he's lonely.
Yeah.
He doesn't know anyone there. If the Jazz said, man, we were going to pay round number $100 for Dame last year, now they're only asking $60 for him. We actually think he's an $80 player. He's not a $100 player. He's an $80 player. We're only paying $60 for him. And like, he kind of likes Utah because he played college basketball here. He knows people here. It's going to be home. And you're getting him on the cheap? Maybe. Maybe. So I don't think Giannis becomes available this offseason unless he demands a trade, which could happen. But everyone's going to be in line to trade for Giannis if that's the case. And the Jazz can put together a great package. And you probably trade everybody, including Lowry, and a bunch of draft picks to get him. But maybe Dame is actually a name that the Jazz revisit and just say, like, hey, Dame's better than he's getting credit for right now and would fit, you know, next to some good pieces. And you can build around that. Maybe guys actually would want to come play next to Dame with Lowry if you didn't have to give up all those pieces to get him and you're buying him at a discount. I could see something like that actually being a kind of a sneaky Danny Ainge buy low move.
Yeah.
I could see that.
Follow-up question from Alex. How many teams do you think are going to tank for Cooper Flagg this season, over under 7?
Let me pull up my NBA standings really quick. I will tell you right now, it's under.
Yeah.
It's definitely
under.
7 teams didn't tank for
Wemby.
Victor.
Yeah,
Victor. So it's going to be way under that. The bottom of the NBA right now was Detroit, Washington, Portland, Charlotte, San Antonio, Toronto, Memphis, the Jazz. Jazz could. Memphis won't. Memphis is too good.
Nope.
Toronto's going to be too good.
Yeah, and also they have Scotty Barnes, which is seems like a Cooper Flagg type player.
Yeah, and look, maybe they bought him out, but honestly, like, Emmanuel Quickley's good, and Scotty Barnes is good. They just have good players. Jakob Poeltl's good. RJ Barrett's okay. They're probably too good to fully tank. Now, maybe they'll trade some of those guys and try and unload further, but they're young and kind of good. So I don't think so. San Antonio won't.
No.
You just can't mess. You can't keep messing with Victor.
Yes.
And I think they're buyers this summer.
I was about to say, I feel like there's already conversations Wemby's top 15. I feel like they're trying to get into the playoff contention already.
I don't think Victor wants to lose for three straight years.
Yeah.
Like, they got to be a little bit careful with that, with Victor. Charlotte, sure. So that's, what are we at, two?
Yeah,
the Jazz
two.
And Charlotte. Portland, maybe.
Yeah.
Like, they need to trade Brogdon. They need to trade Jeremy Grant if they can. I don't know if they can. Washington, absolutely. Washington has to.
Yes.
Like, they need to bottom out. And Detroit probably doesn't want to, but, like, unless they can trade Cade Cunningham this summer, like, again, they're probably going to be okay. Simone's, they're going to sign Simone. The rumor, they're going to try and sign Tobias Harris, which, again, only gets them to 28 wins, but that's not tanking. Brooklyn's too good to do it. Atlanta's probably too good to do it. Jerry Reinsdorf thinks that Chicago winning 38 games is the coolest thing that's ever happened, so he tries it every year. Sacramento's too good. Everyone else is too good. None of these other teams are bad enough to fall out. So that's kind of the part for the Jazz where you're like a little bit tempted to be like, it's the Jazz and Washington and Charlotte?
Yeah.
We could do that. You know, like, you could actually do it for a year and try and get your guy and say that's the franchise going forward. And yes, it stinks. And yes, it's another bad year. But there's a reason to do it because of everything else going on in Salt Lake City. That's why it might be a little bit interesting and intriguing. And I wouldn't rule it out.
All right, last couple questions.
So what do we get, four teams?
Yeah, four, maybe five.
Four, and there's two guys at the top, and Ace Bailey and Cooper Flagg that are kind of thought to be guys. Mm-hmm. So it's not the worst season to do it if you were going to do it.
Definitely. Next up from Sammy Paradise, do you think the Jazz should try and target Alperen Sengun? Could he be available because of the Rockets' late success? I think that even though the Rockets played good with him out, I think that he's easily their best player.
And he is still their best player.
Yeah, and if there's anyone who would be untouchable, I don't think anyone on the Rockets right now is untouchable, he would be the closest to it. I feel like he's like baby Jokic, people call him, right? Like, he can run your offense through Sengun. I would trade Jalen Green in a heartbeat before I trade Sengun.
They will come back next year. I think they might not get a deal done with Jalen Green.
Yeah.
I would keep an eye on that, actually, if I'm a Jazz fan. Keep an eye on if the Rockets get a deal done with Jalen or not. He's eligible for the smaller max, the young player max. Mm-hmm. I'm with you. I would not entertain trading Alperen Sengun, but I would watch Houston, and if they are 20-30 at the trade deadline, or 25 and 28 at the trade deadline and like not good enough, and they want to split up and they say like Jalen wants to play fast and Alperen wants to play slow, I might just take whoever they want to get rid of and say, okay, we'll give you draft picks and we'll give you a veteran player or whatever, and we will start over with this young core. I would keep an eye on Houston as a potential team because I think there's a real chance that those two can't play together.
Yeah.
Now, maybe they just figure out how to play together and they're really good, but I would keep an eye on Houston. Jalen Green's a high-level talent that still has an ability to break out at a higher level, and Alperen's awesome. If he became available, absolutely, that would be maybe the dream scenario for the Jazz as far as pieces out there that you could try and go out there and get.
Last question here from Wild Turkey. In your opinion, what do you think the Jazz will target in the draft, and what players do you think best fit those needs?
So we didn't do a podcast last week, but I did talk about this question a lot, and I actually wrote my article about it. So I will go through it because we haven't talked about it on the podcast, and that's the only way some people consume it. The nice thing for the Jazz is you should always draft best player available, always. Yep. It really is nice for the Jazz that every best player fits on the team. Like, let's say you win the lottery. Right now, Alex Saar is kind of thought to be the number one guy. Okay, the Jazz could use a rim-running, 7-foot-1 defensive menace who projects as a potential three-point shooter.
Yeah.
Great, that's exactly perfect. What you need next to Lowry, or even you could probably make that work with John Collins. Like, he doesn't have to just sit in the dunker spot, could stretch the floor, and he's going to be your best defender, which cleans up a lot of your mistakes.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Awesome.
Take that guy every time. Jaren Jackson Jr.'s kind of been his comp. Okay. Could make that work. Hopefully he rebounds.
DPOY.
But defensive player of the year and all-star. Handshake. Where do I sign? Zachary Risacher, the other French kid. Well, he's 6'9". He's a great three-point shooter. Kind of cooled off a little bit late in the year. you can't have enough 6'9" three-point shooters on your team. They'll fit next to Lowry. They'll fit whatever. You'll find a way to make it work. That fits. That makes sense. Stephon Castle, the guard from UConn, the best perimeter defender in the draft, who has some playmaking skills and is a big body. Great. Sounds like he fits next to Keontae George or Colin Sexton going forward, right? 6'5", 6'6", can play either guard spot, good playmaker, has to figure out how to shoot. That is not the death sentence it once was for lottery players. Yes. A lot of guys learned to shoot in the NBA that couldn't shoot at all coming in. We already touched on Nikola Topic, 6'6", 6'7", guard, who's apparently the most creative passer. Great. He's a playmaker. The Jazz need a connector. He fits next to Keontae George and Colin Sexton. Doesn't shoot the ball super well. Isn't a great defensive player. Some curiosities there.
Yeah.
But you could find a way to make it work. Donovan Clingan. Well, how good was Walker Kessler 2 years ago? Really good. Made an impact on your team. Now expect Donovan Clingan to be just a rich man's version of Walker Kessler. It's kind of what he's projected as.
Yeah.
Really good defensive player, better hands, more competitive, bigger, more of a man, like plays a little bit like stronger than Walker Kessler does. Yeah, could make that work. It might not be the ideal fit of the top 10 players. Donovan Clingan might be the guy you wish you didn't have to use another lottery pick on and you wish Walker would just turn into that guy. But if Clingan is the best case scenario of what you hoped Walker Kessler would be after last year and gets there,
perfect.
Fine. That makes total sense to me. I can sell myself on that. Erases everybody else's mistakes at the rim. Great. Reed Shepard's a little bit of a hard fit because he's a small guard also. And if you think Keontae's a cornerstone or Colin Sexton's a cornerstone, drafting another 6'3" guard to be in your backcourt might be a difficult sell. He's also a 52% three-point shooter. Not floor, three-point. 52% on 4.5 threes per game. He averaged 2.5 steals per game. He's a playmaker on the defensive end. Again, connector, great passer, through-the-roof basketball IQ. I'm curious to see his draft measurements. I actually think that's going to be really important for him. But, like, yeah, a lockdown three-point shooter who, like, maybe was underused. And, by the way, Kentucky's notorious for not getting the most out of their guards. Great. Absolutely Reed Shepard fits. Rob Dillingham, the other guard at Kentucky, maybe has the most, quote-unquote, star potential.
Yeah.
Freakish with the ball in his hands.
Oh.
Twitchy, gets his shots off, also shot over 40% from the three-point line. Coming off the bench, I think was Kentucky's leading scorer, 15 points a game. Not as good a passer. There's some comps to Jordan Clarkson. He's a much better player coming out of college than Jordan Clarkson was.
Yes.
You got to credit Jordan how much better Jordan's gotten, but just a pure bucket. And you know what? Those guys are stars. Like, Rob Dillingham has true star potential. Like, not Shai Gilgeous, he's not that big, but like Kentucky guard, De'Aaron Fox, you know, these guys who figured out Emmanuel quickly, all these guys who have become really high-level guards in the NBA, Rob Dillingham fits that a lot. Would make sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can sell myself on it. He's a small guard and a load of small guards, but I can still sell myself on it.
I see Dillingham as a cross between, like, De'Aaron Fox and Kyrie Irving.
Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Deal. Yes, I'm fine. Twist my arm. Take that guy. Modest Bazalas, 6'9", really good athlete, projects as actually kind of decent defensive player, blocked a lot of shots. Total mess at the G League Ignite, but the G League Ignite was a total mess. I don't chalk that up to him or anything other than that was a design that was supposed to make sense for college players to make money instead of going to college, and then all the college players started making money. Mm-hmm. So it was a little bit of a weird situation. 6'9", potential playmaker, can score in a lot of different ways. Percentages weren't great. Ron Holland, 6'9", also at the G League Ignite, was kind of their go-to scorer. Did not shoot efficiently, but again, it was a mess. Crazy defensive motor. 6'9", crazy defensive motor, who might actually be a go-to scorer. He just wasn't good enough yet in the G League, which was a disaster.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
We'll take that.
Totally makes sense. And then number 10 might be the guy I would target. Again, I need to actually like start doing my draft breakdowns. I will do that. We still had enough stuff going on where I haven't been able to dive into players. Cody Williams, Jalen Williams' little brother, 6'8", great athlete, shot the heck out of the ball, just didn't shoot it a lot, dealt with some injuries, but is really, really intriguing. Like, really, really intriguing. He's projected as 10 on a lot of boards. Well, the Jazz are going to draft no worse than 10th. Great. Yeah, you can do it. So I just walked through the top 10 players in the draft, according to Kristen Peek's draft board at Yahoo Sports. Every single one of them makes sense.
Yeah.
There was not a guy there who I'm like, absolutely zero chance that guy makes any sense at all. There's not a player like that in this draft. So I actually kind of like this draft for the Jazz. I know it's not what everyone hopes for, but the If you're like the Wizards, and you're like, man, we have nothing. We got no chance going forward. We need a superstar, otherwise we're just going to be a disaster. Terrible draft.
Yes.
But if you're the Jazz, you're like, you're kind of good already. You just need another guy who's going to come in and fit and maybe have some star potential. I actually really like this draft. I think it actually makes a lot of sense for the Jazz. So that's how we look at it.
Thank you guys for tuning into the Jazz Notes podcast. That was a quick couple player breakdowns and the mailbag for you. Over the next couple weeks, we'll be doing more player breakdowns next week. Look forward to the three rookies.
Yeah, that'll be fun. Again, follow us on Twitter at KSL Sports, at Chandler Holt KSL. Find me at Ben's Hoops, and we'll be back with you next week.